Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm here about the bear, I told the woman in the ranger station. She didn't react, her eyes not even leaving the computer monitor she was working at. I was about to ask again, a bit louder, when she slowly turned her swivel chair in my direction. She looked at me for the first time. "You're here about the bear?" she asked, looking unconvinced. "Yeah," I said. "I'm Press." She perked up at that, sitting straight and nodding like it was something she'd been expecting. Her demeanor became distinctly more professional. "You're late," she said. "Just wait there. They'll be with you in a second." "I'm going to be honest. I work for one of those spooky tabloid sites. The name of it is something along the lines of the Dark Herald, and my work mostly involves driving long distances in a shitty car to interview lunatics who claim to have seen the Mothman, provided those lunatics have at least a tangential relationship to the New York City metropolitan area. I was sure that no one from my publication had called ahead, but I wasn't above profiting from a misunderstanding. So I sat down in one of the cracked plastic chairs and waited. The walls of the waiting room were covered in posters. A colorful one told me what to do if I encountered a black bear. Another advertised Hessian Lake as the place where Franklin Delano Roosevelt got polios. Another had a picture of a man in a baseball cap who'd been missing for 3 months. I found the reason I was here smiling out at me from a sheet of freshly printed computer paper. A young woman, Mary Santarelli, had vanished without a trace only a few weeks back. There had reportedly been a tagged bear in the area where she had been last seen. So I was meant to drive out, take some videos, and ask questions exploring the bear attack angle. It wasn't a distinctly supernatural occurrence, but for a killer bear, the Herald was apparently willing to bend genres. I didn't wait long before the door creaked open and two park rangers walked out. A man and a woman in matching uniforms with wide-brimmed hats and forest green backpacks. When they saw me, their faces lit up, and I felt a little bad. They probably thought I was from the Times or something. They were definitely going to be disappointed. "Welcome to Bear Mountain," the man said. "I'm Luke." "And I'm Amy," the woman finished. They laughed, stupid grins on both of their faces. I shook their hands. "Tom Mills," I introduced myself, trying not to volunteer any unnecessary information. Amy gave me an assessing look. "Oh, hun," she said, "that's not gonna be nearly warm enough once it gets dark out there." I looked down at my jeans and light coat and had to agree. In my defense, I had previously had no plans to be out there at all, especially not after it had gotten dark. I honestly just walked in to ask a couple questions. "Sorry," I said, trying to come up with an excuse that wouldn't show my hand, but fell back on silence. "It's no problem," Luke said, still smiling. "We have plenty of extra gear you can go ahead and borrow. Just wait right there." He disappeared into the back again, and Amy started gathering up a stack of papers from the desk. I took the time to get some footage of the walls. I'd taken establishing shots of the station before coming inside, and the backdrop of missing persons, flyers would be great B-roll. My eyes trailed across the posters again, coming to rest on the face of Mary Santarelli. "Sad, huh?" Amy said, catching my gaze. "I don't know how much I buy into this bear attack business." She said bear attack like it was as unlikely as an alien abduction, which was funny for a ranger who worked on Bear Mountain. "A lot of folks just get lost out here. They come from the city thinking they don't need to know anything about the woods, and then, well, they find out they were wrong." The callous way she said it made me wonder if Amy wasn't the one attacking tourists. I asked her if she would mind repeating the statement on camera. She didn't. My editor was going to love this. Luke returned shortly with a coat that looked suspiciously like something he'd found in the lost and found. "This should do it," he said. "Thanks," I said. "I hope it isn't too much of a..." "It's no problem," he cut me off, joking, "just make sure you get my good side." They were being very nice, and it was making me uncomfortable. I had more than enough for what I came for, and this was my last chance to come clean without the deception being obviously intentional. "You guys know I'm from the Dark Herald, right?" They looked at me, then at each other. "The what?" Amy asked, as Luke said. "I thought you were from the Post." I shook my head, trying to seem more apologetic than guilty. "Oh," he frowned and glanced at the clock. "The reporter from the Post was supposed to be here hours ago. He didn't seem angry. More let down." Amy patted his shoulder. "It's fine. You've gone this long without your 15 minutes. You'll survive a little more waiting," she said. "I wanted to frame the story and give it to my grams," he lamented, "but I bet they don't even do print." "We can definitely do a print version of this story," I said, trying to be helpful. "It doesn't get much circulation, but if you want, we could make you front page." The print news department of the Dark Herald was basically just one ancient printing press and a formatter named Gary. I was pretty sure he'd oblige. Luke was doubtful. "Really?" "Yeah," I said. "I can even write something up." I grabbed a pen and a piece of notebook paper from the desk and wrote out, "All rights to the story of the bear attacks in Bear Mountain Park are contingent on a picture of Luke." "What's your last name?" I asked. "Jameson," Luke said. "Are contingent on a picture of Luke Jameson and Amy." "No, I don't want my picture on there," Amy interrupted. A picture of Luke Jameson and Amy being featured on the front cover of the print edition. "Good?" I asked. He read over the words again carefully and nodded. I wrote on behalf of the Dark Herald and signed my name at the bottom before handing the paper to Luke. He wrote on behalf of Luke Jameson and signed his own name. I figured that would work. We were out in the car before I realized I had no idea where we were going. I informed them of this. "We're going to get the bear," Amy said. I must have looked as shocked as I felt because she laughed. "Don't worry. One of the traps was triggered up near where the attack supposedly happened, but Teddy's GPS tag is acting wacky, so it's probably not even him we caught." "Teddy?" I asked. "It's what she named the killer bear," Luke explained. "You know how rare fatal black attacks are," she said to him. "There have been way more disappearances this year than normal. You really think Teddy's killed over half a dozen people? There's definitely something else going on." Luke was silent at that, and it sunk in that I had very abruptly become part of a bear hunt. I made sure to keep the camera rolling. "What do you think it could be?" I asked Amy. She glanced back from the passenger side. "Now I can't be sure," she said, looking into the camera seriously. "But I think the evidence points to a serial killer." "No way," Luke scoffed. "They would have found something by now if someone was up here killing people." Amy glared. "Oh, yeah, because it's much more reasonable to believe that they've all been devoured by bears." "How many people have gone missing?" I asked. 10 people just this year," she said. "The most anyone's ever heard of." I felt a pit in my stomach that was a lot of people. "And they haven't found anything?" She shook her head. "Teddy must be damn hungry if he isn't even leaving clothes behind." The rest of the drive passed in relative silence, down a narrow road that wound through the forest like it had been drawn by a 6-year-old's crayon. They explained that while the trap wasn't even 10 miles out, getting their truck there was a hassle. I didn't mind the drive. I got some shots of the trees out the window. It was getting late in the day, and the way the shadows played across the truck was almost sinister. We were driving slow on something that could barely be called a road at all when the vehicle jerked and started wobbling. Luke cursed. It felt like we'd just gotten a flat. He was trying to pull off the road when we saw it. Tangled in the plants a couple yards ahead of us was something I can only describe as a metal scrap heap. Pieces of it were scattered across the road. One of them had probably been the thing to pop our tire. "Holy shit," Luke said. He stopped the car, jumping out to get a better look. I followed with the camera. "What was it?" I asked. "Whatever it was, it looked like it had been crushed like tinfoil." "It's the bear trap," Luke said. "But it looks like whatever got caught, and it wanted out real bad." I was surprised. Can bears normally break out of bear traps? He hesitated. "It's not unheard of," he said. "For polar bears," Amy exclaimed. "No way a black bear could have done a thing like this. No way." I started getting close-ups of the wreckage. It was incredible in some places. The solid metal sheets were squashed, torn apart like tissue paper. "Oh, so what? Did we catch a serial killer that can go hulk and break out of bear cages?" I noticed something about the curvature of the metal. It looked like it had been punched in. "Guys," I said, "I don't think anything broke out of the cage. It was hard to see in the dimming light and tall grass. But the ground around it was coated in something black. I think something got Teddy." They stopped fighting to look at me like I was crazy. But then something moved. I can't describe the sound exactly, or maybe it wasn't even a sound, but a vibration in the ground. The instinctual sense that something very large and alive was nearby. We all froze, going silent. Maybe it was because they were park rangers and I had some experience with the supernatural, but nobody screamed. No one cried out in disbelief. We all just cowered, our eyes snapping in the direction of the thing and back at each other with the animalistic dread of prey. We were ballet dancers, silently prancing backwards on the balls of our feet, gracefully, moving as if our fear made the air syrupy thick. We made it to the truck. My hand was about to land on the door handle when Luke unlaced his own. The thing in the woods noticed. I couldn't see it, not really, but as it stalked the forest around us, I could make out its size, lither than a bear, but several times larger. The dance ended. The thing came at us just as Luke started the engine. There was definitely screaming then. Metal crunched as the tailgate was ripped clear off of the truck. "Go faster," Amy cried. Luke cursed, the tires flat. "I go any faster. This thing stops going at all." "You go any slower, we're all dead," she yelled. She was messing around on her phone, I assume trying to get reception. "The cab isn't going to keep that thing out," I said. "How far can we make it?" I couldn't see where it was, but I knew it wasn't gone. Amy was taking deep breaths, not far enough to be useful, she said. "There's a turn right here. It'll take us to Doodletown."
"Doodletown," I repeated. She had to be joking. "It's just some old foundations, but..." She cut off, her voice almost a sob, but I can't think of anything else. "There's reception there. We can call for help." Luke was very focused on driving the crippled truck, but declared we could make it to Doodletown. Like his willpower alone could keep the tire spinning. He made a hard left, I assume, towards Doodletown. Ahead of us, the forest exploded. The creature dove from the cover of the trees, impossibly fast, landing hard enough that I could feel its weight. If we had continued straight, it would have been on top of us. I caught a glimpse of slick black fur and coiled legs as it slunk back into the trees. We all screamed again, plunging down the dirt road. I don't know how much time passed before we blew past the Doodletown sign, leaving a trail of chaos and the smell of burning rubber. I saw it moving. "Stop!" I screamed, lunging forward and grabbing the wheel. Luke hit the brakes, and my panicked twisting of the wheel somehow led the back to drift forward. The creature sunk its claws in, appearing from nowhere and tearing the truck apart in a rage. I was weightless, pitched through the air, seatbelt still attached like some kind of morbid carnival ride. I landed almost 10 feet away and barely registered how bad I'd messed up my arm. I'd like to say that I ran back to help the others, or that I even considered doing so, but at this point, something else took over, something inside me that didn't care about anything other than survival. I bolted into the foundation graveyard that I guess made up Doodletown. I tripped through the overgrown stone buildings, listening for the sound of the creature behind me, trying desperately to find somewhere to hide. I found it behind a warning, structurally unsound sign at the opening of an old stone basement. I dove down the steps, only then realizing I should call for help. I took out my phone and realized the problem. I was in a basement. Then I thought about Amy and Luke for the first time. And God, did I feel like a piece of shit. I needed to do something. I needed to see if they were still alive. Creeping back up the stairs, I stuck my head out past the sign, and I saw something horrible. Amy was about 20 yards off, something sticking out of her side. She was sitting against an old crumbling wall, and the creature was on the other side. I could hear the wet sounds of ripping flesh. It was eating. She wouldn't last long. Hell, I probably wouldn't either, but I had reception. I called 911, but I don't know what they said because I muted the call. "Doodletown," I whispered as I crept away from the basement. "Send help to Doodletown." I unmuted it for just a second to make sure there was a person on the line. "Sir, can you hear me?" the voice said, and I muted it again. "I'm Tom Mills. I'm in Doodletown in Bear Mountain Park with a park ranger named Amy and Luke Jameson. He's dead." I didn't try to listen to her response. I hung up the phone and threw it as far as I could manage, hoping that my OtterBox was worth it. I crept towards Amy. She was still sitting against the wall, her face bloodless and her eyes glazed over. There was an empty look on her face as she listened to it tear pieces out of her partner. The thing sticking out of her side was a long piece of metal shrapnel. When she saw me, she opened her mouth like she was going to say something, but she cut off when I frantically held a finger to my lips. She seemed to pale even further. As quietly as I could, I whispered, "Can I borrow your phone?" She looked at me like she could barely process the request, but then nodded to the pocket of her jacket. I need you to get ready to move, I said.
I can't, she gasped, looking at her legs.
I'll help, but you need to move, I said. She nodded, a hard look in her eye. I dialed my number, and from across the foundations, the iPhone opening ringtone blared out, seeming as loud as a foghorn. The creature froze, bloody maw snapping shut, unable to completely hide the rows of its jagged teeth. It turned toward the ringing phone, slinking off to investigate. I hoisted Amy's arm around my shoulder, and together we hobbled towards the basement. Halfway there, almost, the thing roared, an awful and strangely high-pitched noise, and when I looked towards it, I met its eye. It came at us then, its almost ferret-like body no longer keeping up the pretense of stalking prey. This was an outright attack. Go, go, go! Well, go! I chanted at the ridiculously slow Amy. Jesus, how was she so slow? We got into the basement just as the creature reached us. Its claws came in first, grasping at us and clattering together like bones. It retracted, then began to ram its body through the opening. Again and again, the building began to rumble with the sound of shifting stone. I thought that was it. I was about to die in a hole in the ground in a place called Doodletown. I would never find proof of the Jersey Devil. I would never see Mothman. The building collapsed. The last thing I remember was the look on Amy's face, then darkness. I came to the sound of frantic yelling and flashing lights. I was dazed. Something was lifting me from beneath the stones. I was on a stretcher. I glanced back towards the basement and saw it was completely destroyed. Someone else, I said to the floating heads above me, Amy. They seemed to understand. The next time I woke up, it was to the steady beat of a heart monitor. Still a little panicked, I tried to sit up, which started off a louder alarm that made me a little more panicked. A nurse rushed in, saying stuff in her nice nurse voice, and eventually I calmed down enough to ask what the hell was going on. You have to understand that it took some time for all these memories to come back. At first it was just flashes of primal terror and falling rocks. You were in an accident, she explained. The way the night was explained to me went like this. I went out in a truck, and somehow the driver lost control of the vehicle. Then I took shelter in a basement to await help, only to become trapped and sustain a traumatic brain injury when a minor localized earthquake caused the structure to collapse. What? I said. The nurse shrugged, upped my drugs, and left. The next time I woke up, Amy was there. She was sitting in a wheelchair, looking terrible. When she saw that I was awake, she wheeled towards me. You need to tell them what happened, she yelled too loud. They think I'm crazy. You need to tell them about the monster. I was stunned, too high to comprehend exactly what she was saying. At this point, her yelling attracted the attention of a nurse, who, when she walked in on Amy, waving a hand in my face and snapping, promptly wheeled her out of the room. I didn't see Amy again, not for a long time. When I called my work, they were more disappointed that I lost my camera than worried about my absence and hospitalization. Just hurry back, they said some guy in Great Kills saw a kraken. The memories returned slowly, but all I can say is this. Whatever got those tourists, it wasn't natural, and with the amount of cryptid sightings that have been rolling into our newsroom, maybe now isn't a great time to go camping. I'm a 22-year U.S. Army veteran. My specialty was infantry scout for most of my service. I attended one station unit training at Fort Benning, Georgia, where I was taught scout skills. I was deployed to Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Bosnia, and Kosovo. At the time of this incident, I was based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. It was in 1996, and we were going to be part of a joint training exercise at Fort Lewis, Washington. We had been there for a few weeks and were involved with various tasks, including posing as terrorists, in multiple exercises. On the night of the incident, I had decided that our OP-4 team should get a few hours of rest before we would go on the mission. We parked the Humvee as close as possible to the hill that I thought would be best to keep us from being noticed, and climbed up the hilltop for the next day's mission. We were planning to attack on or about 5A. My guard shift started at midnight. Not long after the shift began, we were awoken by live small, arms fire. Everyone involved in this training exercise carried blanks and all had red blank adapters attached at the end of the muzzle. There's a very distinct difference in sound between live rounds and blank rounds. The firing was about 350 to 400 meters from our location on the opposite side of the hill where, according to the war map, no unit was to be. Within moments of the firing starting, there was a very loud roar. I had previously heard a lion's roar, and this was much louder. You could feel it. The guys and I were scared. The weapon fire lasted 30 seconds. Two of my soldiers were about to run down the hill to see what was going on. I had to stop them. We gathered our M16s and night vision goggles and cautiously proceeded down the hill, going from tree to tree to hide. There were a few bright flashlights we could see as we approached. One of my team was on the radio when suddenly another soldier shouted out movement up on the hill. We got caught and we were told to reveal ourselves and approach. That's when we saw the opposing squad in front of us. Laying in front of the squad were two Sasquatch. The male was obviously dead and the female was breathing heavily, spitting out and choking on her blood. The squad took our weapons and night vision goggles, and the one talking identified himself only as a captain. He was talking loudly and was upset that we were there. Much of what was said at first didn't register with us because we were looking at the two Sasquatch. The male was sprawled on his back. The female soon succumbed to her wounds and stopped breathing. My team and I were in shock at what we were seeing. The captain who was talking to me got right up into my face to get my attention. I noticed an awful odor coming from the creatures. Once the shock wore off, I took a real close look at these men in the opposing squad. Their equipment and weapons were not standard issue. I soon realized that they were Delta Force because of the helmets they were wearing. About 5 minutes later, a colonel came up and gave us a butt, chewing. We were moved down the hill, but before that, the Delta Force was prepping the Sasquatch for extraction. A Black Hawk Kilo came in low and hovered above. We later traveled for about 2 hours until we arrived at a location where we were ushered into a room where we waited for over an hour. The colonel and other military officers, including the Delta Force captain, came in and gave us direct orders not to speak of this matter and that if it was discovered that we did, we'd be facing UKMJ disciplinary action. They really put the fear of God in us. We were told that our battalion commander was informed of us interfering with their training mission and we were to return to the TOC. After we were debriefed, since I was the only NCO of the group, I was threatened with having my career ruined if I ever spoke of this again. Sometime later, we were loaded up on a 5-ton truck under guard and driven back to the hill where all of this took place. We were allowed to gather our stuff from the hilltop and followed to the TOC's current location. The truck following us just continued moving on down the road. We were given another butt, chewing by our battalion commander. That incident has eaten at me for all these many years since it occurred. I wanted to climb the roof of my house and shout it out loud, but the fear of reprisal from the army or the government kept me from doing so. I kept thinking that some government man was listening to podcasts to see if any military or government affiliate ever came on the shows and spilled the beans about what goes on. I don't know why those Sasquatch were hunted and killed. I just remember her labored breathing and seeing tears rolling down her face as she died. Several things also are not included in this letter to you because it would be a book more or less. I just wanted to state the most important things about this incident. I just needed to get it out in the open and set myself free from this. It's been 28 years and whatever happens, well, it happens.
Safari Guide here. Woke up one morning with something very warm, rather soft and comfy on my back. Realized my back was against the canvas of the tent. Realized it was an animal. It was a really cold winter night. Temperatures dropped close to zero here in the Lowveld. WTF? As I moved a bit, I heard the voice from my buddy from his tent. He spoke a bit hushed and with a definite tremble in his voice. "The Africa Bug, are you awake?" "Stupid me," replied with a strong voice. "Yes." The animal next to me got up and, luckily, ran away. It was a big male lion. Four of us scouts had sneaked out of camp for a bit of clandestine adventure. It was a moonlit night, and we found ourselves on the southernmost edge of camp, right next to a rancher's field. Huddled together, we sat in the darkness, hidden from the watchful eyes of our scout leaders. The night was silent, save for the chirping of crickets and the rustle of leaves in the gentle breeze. The full moon cast an ethereal glow over the landscape, revealing the vastness of the rancher's field before us. As we exchanged quiet laughs and hushed stories, our attention was abruptly drawn to something extraordinary. In the moonlit expanse of the field, we saw a massive bipedal figure standing at an imposing 7-8 feet tall. It moved with an eerie grace, a silhouette against the illuminated night. Its steps were deliberate as it traversed the rancher's field, casting elongated shadows in its wake. In awe, we watched as this mysterious figure crossed the road, disappearing briefly into the shadows before re-emerging on the other side. Unfazed by our presence, it continued its nocturnal journey, making its way down to the nearby river. For what felt like an eternity, we sat in stunned silence, our hearts pounding in our chests. The encounter with the towering biped left us both fascinated and terrified. As it vanished into the night, we mustered the courage to stay put for another 30 minutes, processing the surreal experience we had just shared. Eventually, we gathered ourselves and made our way back to camp, careful to avoid detection. The night had gifted us a glimpse into the unknown, a mysterious encounter etched into our memories. The next morning, as we joined our fellow scouts around the campfire, we exchanged knowing glances, united by the secret we had witnessed beneath the watchful glow of the full moon. I spent about a week helping my uncle with his claim. I operated the dredge while he worked on the sluice box. One day, he called me over to the shore, handed me the binoculars, and pointed to a stump we had visited earlier on the hillside, which had been clear-cut across the river in approximately 150. 250 yards away, through the binoculars, I could see a figure that looked like a squatch standing by the stump. The stump was about 4 feet tall, reaching just below his waist. The squatch stood there, observing us for about 20 minutes. There wasn't much movement, just some swaying. Abruptly, he turned and walked over the ridgetop, disappearing from our view. He returned the next 2 days, standing and watching us around the same time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And each day. However, for the last 3 days we were there, he didn't show up at all. My uncle later mentioned that it had appeared off and on, but he had chosen to ignore its presence. I saw it in Idaho Falls. My name is Angela, and I am a 47-year-old female from Idaho Falls, Idaho. I grew up in Idaho, and I am an avid animal lover, especially wolves, since I was very young. I'm writing to tell you about my dogman encounter when I was around 16 or 17 years old. This would have been right around 1986. Or 1987. Anyway, myself, my friend, and my other friend decided one night to go into our local cemetery and look for what is called the knocking grave and the werewolf grave. We found the knocking grave and discovered that it is just a loose board which vibrates back when you knock on the grave. We never found the werewolf grave, so we just chalked it up as being a myth. We decided to go back to the car, and we were talking when my friends, A and B, decided they wanted some alone time. They were a couple at the time. I got out of the car and decided to walk around the cemetery by myself. It was a beautiful night with a full moon shining above. Ironic, I know. I was walking along looking at the old gravestones and thinking of how sad it is that so many people are completely forgotten after they die. When I heard a strange sound to my left, I was standing near a mausoleum, looking down into another part of the cemetery. I heard the sound again and started walking towards it. It sounded as though something was crunching on something. I stood there for a minute listening. I immediately noticed how quiet it had gotten in the cemetery, and the hair stood up on my neck and arms. Usually there is noise from cars, dogs barking, crickets, or something like that, but there was nothing. I then saw a silhouette of something big and black standing a little ways away from me, around 25 feet away to be exact. Something told me to back away slowly and leave now, but I ignored it. I crept closer to the creature, never taking my eyes off of it. My eyes had adjusted to the darkness, and I could see very well, especially with the moonlight helping light up the night. What I saw terrified me and also piqued my curiosity. The creature first looked like a huge wolf, but the front legs and torso were abnormally large, and the back legs were huge as well. It had a long, furry tail behind it, just like a wolf's tail. The head was huge, and it had long, pointed ears with tufts of fur at the tips. From what I could see, it was leaning down and eating something. The sounds I had heard were the crunching it made when it bit into whatever it was eating. I was excited because I'd always wanted to see a wild wolf, and I thought that was what I was looking at. I figured that maybe a wolf had escaped the zoo, which was right next door to the cemetery, and had caught a rabbit or something. I realized, though, that the zoo didn't have a wolf in it and hadn't had one for years. That made me even more excited and curious. I stared at this creature for about a minute or so, and then I shifted my legs to get more comfortable. I must have stepped on a twig or scuffled my feet because the creature suddenly stopped eating, looked up, and turned its head my way. It then stood up on its back legs, and I heard a loud pop. That is when I realized that this was not a huge wolf. It was black and had a few brownish streaks in its fur. When it stood up, I saw its head, chest, stomach, and lower body.
The shoulders and chest were massive and covered in fur that tapered down as you looked at the stomach area and legs. It reminded me of a bodybuilder on steroids because of how muscular it was. As it stood there, it started to sniff the air and then stopped and stared my way. The eyes were a deep orange, gold, and seemed to glow in the moonlight. It looked at me, and I felt a fear grow deep within me that I had never felt before. I knew it saw me, and I knew I had made a huge mistake by not leaving when I first got that bad feeling. It felt as though everything went cold, and this creature could see within my soul. It stared at me for a minute, and then it opened its mouth and bared its teeth at me as if it were smiling. The teeth were huge, yellowish-white, and they looked very sharp, just right for ripping its prey apart. It never took its eyes off of me. It then lifted its arm and took a bite out of whatever it was eating. I then realized the sound I had heard was it crunching bone and tearing flesh as it ate its meal. The hands were like elongated paws, and at the end of each finger were huge black claws that gripped the leg it was eating. I stood there watching it eat for what seemed like hours when it could have only been a few moments. It never took its eyes off me. The fear I felt overwhelmed me. I felt sick, and I was visibly shaking. So I did the one thing I'd been taught to never do when confronted with a predator. I turned and I ran as fast as I could toward the car. I didn't care. I couldn't get its eyes out of my head, and that smile, those teeth. I could just imagine it catching me and ripping me to shreds. As I ran, I made it to the car, flung open the door, and jumped in, screaming for both of my friends to start the car and get us the hell out of there. They asked me what was wrong, and I just yelled at them to go now. They both looked at me and saw the terrified look on my face, so they started up the car, and we left. I never went back to that cemetery again. Later that night, I told both of my friends what I had seen, and they both just laughed at me and told me it was just my mind playing tricks on me, which made me feel hurt that they didn't believe me. But I could hardly believe it myself. I saw a werewolf, or what is referred to as a dogman, and I will never forget it. Please, if you're listening to this, don't ever traverse to the Idaho Falls Cemetery. This will be a brief summary because if I wrote most of the entire encounter here, well, way too long. On July 4, 2016, just a few days ago now, two girlfriends and myself decided to raft down the Chattahoochee River and spend time at the Diving Rock and laugh at all the drunks enjoying their holiday. This is a North Georgia summer tradition going way back to the 60s. I am 47 now, but in my youth I did it quite a few times and damn near killed myself doing a gainer off the Diving Rock when I landed on my belly, inhaled water somehow, and nearly drowned. I was fairly drunk and don't remember how I made it back to the surface, but my upper body was purple the next day and my internal organs hurt for weeks. The river was way down that year, maybe 1988, so that made the big flat rock at least 5 feet high off the river. Most people chickened out once they got up there. Anyhow, so this past Monday, after at least 28 years, we were back, but sober now since I haven't drank alcohol in over 10 years. I had to answer the call of nature, or two, so I had to walk very far back into the dense woods because of all the people, 15 or so, waiting to jump. Having nothing but my bathing suit, I walked much further so I could try and find something akin to toilet tissue. Finally, after I reached a small clearing surrounded by old-growth pines, I began my business, as I am squatting in a very vulnerable position. Out walks in broad daylight an enormous canine-type creature. I spent 21 years in army all over the world in 3 different theaters of war. And I have never even heard of this creature before. In the 3 days since, I have barely slept at all, researching everything in a zombified state. I can still taste the fear in my throat and my own vomit. I am 6 foot tall and about 250 solid pounds, and this thing dwarfed me.
at least 7'6" and maybe 350, 400 pounds. As a former college and semi-pro football player and powerlifter, I know about big people and about strength and musculature, and this was no normal creature that evolved somehow in that environment. This is some kind of genetically mixed entity of man, wolf, and primate. My encounter with it lasted for minutes. It displayed very bizarre behavior and vocalized several times at me. It stunk so bad and horrified me so badly that I retched again and again. I was gone so long that the girls came looking for me, and they are what finally scared it off. When they found me, I was trembling and couldn't speak. As a combat lifesaver in the Army, I can tell you for certain that I was in shock from this. Every joint in my body and my ab muscles are still hurting after 3 days. So I will be more than willing to share everything with you in the hopes that I can relieve my anxiety somewhat by just expressing my trauma. Because I'm not sure what type I saw, but I can promise you that this is not something that anyone would want to encounter twice. I'm not grateful, I don't feel privileged, and I will not chase after this thing with a camera. Give me a call if you want, and leave me a text. If I can answer, because I work different hours than most, thanks for providing a forum for us experiencers. I need it. This took place 3 weeks ago while driving home from an event with my fiancé. It was already dark, and rain added to the challenge as we hit the road that night. I was behind the wheel, and my fiancé occupied the passenger seat. Approximately 15 minutes into our journey, we reached a section of the road where I spotted a rather large figure in the opposite lane of the two-way road we were on. It appeared to be on all fours, and had a grayish color. The swift movement caught me off guard, especially given the adverse weather conditions. I asked my fiancé if she had seen it, to which she replied yes, but she seemed spooked. I wanted to stop, but with another car about 100 feet behind us, I couldn't. Additionally, I refrained from looking back, focusing on the road due to the poor conditions and the unfamiliar territory we found ourselves in that night. Despite the fleeting glimpse, I don't believe it was a cow based on what I saw. Its fur resembled more of a canine nature. I would have to speculate that it was either a dogman or a Bigfoot. I regret not having a longer look at it during the daytime. It was within feet of my door, but the quick sequence of events and my decision to maintain focus on the road, rather than turning to look at it, prevented me from seeing it clearly. That pretty much sums up my encounter. I had my encounter in western Pennsylvania near the Shenango River in Crawford County. This was in 2008 when I was a teen. I was night fishing in the pond across the street from my family friend's horse farm I was staying at for the summer. The side of the pond I was fishing from is an open field from the left to the road, and the opposite side has a thick oak forest leading up to the shore that is massive and stretches for a few miles in width and probably 10 miles long. His is the only house in the area. His nearest neighbor is almost 3 miles up the road. I had been out for around an hour and already had 4 10-15 elbeck catfish on my stringer, so I was just enjoying the quiet and sky more than anything. I started hearing some rustling 100 yards or so into the woods across the pond from me. At first, I just thought it was the dog digging something up, until I realized he was still lying beside me. Then I started to make out 4 human-like figures that kept walking up near the edge of the tree line across the pond, and then walking back to where I couldn't make them out anymore. This went on for around 20 minutes and was freaking me out, because the family friend lives by himself, and I was the only person there that night besides him, so I knew it wasn't just him messing with me. Then I stopped seeing them, but could still hear the occasional noises of something moving in the woods just out of sight for another 20 minutes or so. It was almost 1 a.m. at that point, and the fish weren't biting anymore, but I was too freaked out to take my eyes off the woodline long enough to pack up my tackle box and rod and clean the fish. Then I saw one of the figures come up to the edge of the woodline again, and it heaved a rock that had to have been about 40 pounds or so, judging by the splash it made. It darn near made it to the middle of the pond, which is roughly 60 yards wide. I was scared to death and immediately jumped up and started sprinting the quarter mile back to the house. I left all of my gear there, the fishing line still cast out, a stringer of fish still in the pond in front of me, etc. My tackle box and gear are still my most prized possessions to this day, but that's how deathly afraid I was at the moment. Luckily, the dog freaked out as much as I did and beat me back to the house because I didn't think about him at all either. I ran inside and started to tell the family friend what happened. He didn't even bat an eye and just told me to grab the spotlight we use for coon hunting, and he grabbed his rifle. It took 5 minutes from the time I booked it in fear until we were back down at the pond. The stringer of fish was gone, and the whole tub of chicken livers I was using as bait was nowhere in sight. I reeled in my line, packed up my tackle box, and we walked around the woods, spotting for around a half hour, and didn't find the stringer of fish or blue bucket from the chicken livers anywhere, nor any animals or anything. We went back to the house, and he told me that he had had a family of Bigfoot living on his property for a few years, but didn't want people to think he was crazy, so never brought it up. I had a lot of experiences on that property that summer and since, but none that intense. Just a lot of being followed through the woods while hunting or collecting mushrooms, berries, and hearing them talking in the woods around me. This happened around the year 2000, about a year after this took place. I started dating one of these friends, and that's when I first heard about this dog-slash-wolf story. I have since asked each friend over years and miles apart, and they all remember the same encounter. Before my ex was even my boyfriend, let's call him Jay, he and our other friends were about 17, 18 years old. At that age, I remember it being an adventure to find a place to smoke. Let's hike to X and Puff. Aw, good old days when we got away from our parents and planned a day around smoking. It was Jay and his best friend B and their girlfriends, A&M. The four of them decided to drive to Mac, Pisgah, a beautiful wooded area outside of Eugene, Oregon. It's more of a hill, but it's nature in its prime for sure. I've been out there many times growing up, and I know exactly what trail they were on, the main one that connects the parking lot to the river. They had driven in B's little white sedan, parked in the parking lot, and then walked to the river. On the way to the river from the lot, there is a very small bridge that crosses a small creek, relevant for later. The group spent the day out there swimming and puffing, puffing and swimming, just being typical Oregonian teens. I can imagine that hunger is what drove them to go home after a few hours. As the sun began to set, either activity alone is bound to get someone hungry, let alone both. So they walked along the well-worn main dirt path to the parking lot. This path has since been paved, according to Google Maps. It doesn't take but 20 minutes or so for them to get back to the little footbridge by the parking lot that they had crossed when they hiked in. When they reached this small footbridge near the parking lot, B looked out into the vast field between them and the wooded mountain and noticed a huge dog near the tree line. About 100 yards away, they all later described it as the biggest dog they had ever seen. The dog was just sitting there, not looking scary, just looking like a humongous friendly doggy. It was starting to get dark, but from M's and J's descriptions, and the drawing she did for me later in 2005, it was very shaggy and furry. I may even still have that notebook where she drew the dog thing. If I find it, I'll post it. My friends continued to walk across this small wooden bridge, and one of the girls screamed. The big dog was now on its hind legs, standing much closer than when they had seen it just a couple of seconds earlier. It had traversed most of the large field in the seconds it took them to get across this 10 feet long bridge. Whatever this thing was, it was fast, quiet, and stealthy. My four friends ran to the car, and they had the classic cliché, "I can't get the key in," because B was fumbling madly for the keys. At this point, the dog was standing on its legs, at the very edge of the parking lot looking at them. Still had the dog face, still had the dog buddy, standing up. They never saw it walking. On all four, or just two, it was like every time they looked up, it was just standing there, closer. As Jay had said, every time they looked up, it was closer, but not moving. All of them recounted how surreal it was to see a dog standing on its hind legs. I don't know if it ran for a few ticks and then stood up again at intervals in the field, but that's the way they describe it. Many times I asked them, "Are you sure it wasn't a bear?" "No, it definitely was a dog standing on its hind legs. A big dog that was stalking them." Also, this is in Lane County, Oregon, in the year 2000. There are few, if any, bears out there. It would be odd, but then again, I wasn't there. The kids got into the car and sped off, leaving the Pisgah dog to his own business. I've never had a reason to doubt any of their stories. In fact, she doesn't like to talk about the incident at all because it's too creepy for her to recall. I was driving home through the mountains from a concert on July 11, 2014 on Route 8 in Hamilton County, New York. It was 12:30, 7 a.m. I hit a creature that was carrying a deer with my car. My car was damaged from the hood to the rear by this creature, and I know it was at least injured, and its DNA may have been on my car. The speed limit was 55, and I was not able to stop in time when I saw the creature who was carrying a deer about to step into the road. I hit the brakes, but I was only able to slow down before impact. I did not really believe in Bigfoot before that night, and I'm still shaken up, and I have not been able to share this story with anyone. I wanted to stop and see if the creature was okay, but I was scared out of my wits to stop and get out of the car. The creature was huge, at least 7.5 feet tall. I've seen drawings and such of Bigfoot, and this creature looked similar, but had white around its hairline, and its fur was dark brown, almost black. I'm shaking writing this, and I'm in such disbelief that this happened to me. I didn't even report the accident to the police, and I didn't know what to tell my insurance company. My car was totaled. The creature crushed my windshield wipers together, broke many pieces off the passenger side, and left smears of dirt and blood all over the rear window. I live in the United Kingdom and live in the countryside. I live on a moderately busy lane and have loads of fields behind my house. 5 minutes up the road, there's a hill. It's called Cole Peak, changed for privacy, in Gloucestershire. It's about 6 fields away from my house and a 5-minute walk from the road. Me and my two mates go to the peak that overlooks our town and can see the Severn Bridge and a place called Stone House. They smoke weed, but I don't, so I can't blame it on the weed. We sat up the top for a good hour chilling. We decided to go home as it was around 2 a.m., They walk the roadway as it leads to the town where they live, and I decided to walk to the fieldway as I didn't want to walk down the road on my own after my mates turn off, so to get to the fields you have to walk through a little forest. For around 1-2 minutes, it was pitch black, moon shining, bright stars in the sky. As I said before, I don't get scared, so I wasn't that bothered. I got around 2/3 through the forest when I heard sticks cracking to my left as if something heavy was walking. I just glanced over and presumed it was a fox or badger. I get towards the gate and open it as it leads into the fields that lead to my house. I closed the gate and started to walk, and that's when I heard something I will never forget. It sounded like Minecraft creeper, but a lot deeper sounding and bigger. I turned around, and on the path I could see this thing, around 6 feet tall, skinny, head shaped like a dog, and had horns. I thought my eyes were playing tricks, so I just stood there watching it, hoping it was going to vanish. Well, to my surprise, after around 5 seconds, it started to very slowly walk closer and closer. Until it got to the gate, it was like it didn't know what to do except just stand there. I was sweating, had a red vision, and thought I was going to have an anxiety attack. I slowly walked across the field trying to figure out what the F it was. I looked back about halfway across the field and it was gone. Sigh of relief. Can finally calm down and just take a nice walk home. Yeah, that's what I was hoping for. I was in the last field from my house in view. I knew all I had to do was jump over my fence, and I was in my garden. I got to my fence and hopped over. I felt safe and secure. I was walking across my garden to get to the back door, and behind me, my drive light came on. Now this light only comes on if it detects motion or it's really windy and a branch sways in front of it. It wasn't windy, nor did I walk past it. All of a sudden, I had this fear of getting snatched, so I quickly ran to my back door, opened it, and ran to my attic, converted room. My skylight window looks over my drive where the light came on, and I stood on my bed and looked out the window. That's when I saw this werewolf-looking thing with horns standing there sniffing around the cars. It wasn't a dog. It wasn't small enough to be a badger or a fox, and wasn't a cow or anything like that. I got into bed and just watched movies till the sun came up and slept then. Ever since then, I never look out my window at night and never walk through those fields. I honestly don't know what this thing was, but it scared the crap out of me. I won't go out in my garden past 11 p.m. CBD. The eyewitness include this follow-up. On the night of December 7, 2018, it was very cold. That's why we only stayed for an hour at that peak. It could have been a dude in a mask first sighting, but the chances of that are really, really slim, as I've lived here 15 years now and pretty much know 90% of the town and have never heard of anyone saying anything about a scary sighting or anything along those lines. The thing by the cars was definitely not a man in a mask. It wasn't small horns. It looked like horns that had a few horns coming off it. I don't know what it was, but I definitely don't want to see or be given it again. My brother and I were canoeing on Lake George in New York State at about sunset. We headed south for 10 minutes to an area known as Deer Leap at Lakeside. It's a boulder-strewn area with cliffs rising 600 feet above the shoreline. As we were beginning to come to this area, we saw something standing on the shore. It was brownish in color and standing straight up with its arms at its sides. It was about the size of a small man and very thin. Its body was facing south, looking down the shoreline, when it suddenly turned its head directly toward us and looked very intently. We whispered to each other and watched it while it watched us. We were two grown men paddling parallel to the shore and about 200 feet out, but we could not summon up the courage to go in closer. This thing had a strange look with almost a crazed grin, like a giant lemur. The sun was set now as we continued to watch it in the shadows of the mountain, as it was standing next to an old dead pine tree. It turned and climbed sloth, like up the tree about 20 feet to the first and only large limb and under the crook of a branch. We paddled back around, and as we approached it again, it cocked its head directly at us. After about a minute or so, it turned its face downward into its body and became as if it were part of the tree, just as a lump on the crook of a branch. You would not know if it was there unless you saw it move. I have lived in this area all my life and have never seen anything like this, and I have not seen it since. In my searching, I have found a reference to a creature found in the woods of New Hampshire. They called it the devil or the stigma. The one thing in common is that they can blend into trees to avoid being seen. So I've never really believed in skinwalkers or anything like that, even when I had this experience. I am a Marine Corps veteran and wish to leave my name anonymous. This happened to me when I was on my first deployment to Iraq in 2009. One night I was on fire watch, or night watch, whatever people prefer. Pretty much security detail, keeping an eye out for weird stuff, for the Taliban trying to sneak around outside the walls. Me and my battle buddy were of sound mind, sober, well-rested, and very alert. Now it was normal to see stray dogs or other animals out in the distance when we scanned with our scopes or night vision, but one night we saw a pair of glowing yellow eyes that we never seen before. They were so bright, like a burning yellow. So I point my scope up and look with my night vision and see nothing. Confused, I tap my buddy and tell him to look also. He scans. Nothing, so we think nothing of it. Few hours later, everything's normal, talking quietly, chewing tobacco, and we hear this woman start screaming bloody murder and screaming for help, but it wasn't a normal scream. Now I've heard people scream from serious injury or taking out the enemy. This sounded like someone was in hell. So we both scanned the area ahead and see a flash of a dog, but it looked too big to be a dog. So we call it in, and the tower flashes a big area light in the area, and the animal was so fast and ran into the darkness. Screaming starts again, and tower worded too. It stopped finally, and we went out to explore the area with a few others. And we found barefoot prints and animal tracks. Had a few more weird experiences when I was stationed on that camp, and it's always stuck with me. Recently did a deep dive into skinwalkers, and I'm convinced we had a skinwalker near our camp.